Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Big Book Awakening workshop with myself, Tyla, and Josie. Glad to see everybody here. We're going to do a meditation and then we will open it up because we want to help everyone kind of get centered. I'm going to play the meditation music we use tonight. I kind of wanted feedback from you guys if you like music or you like silent. Most of the time I've had people tell me they want music. I tried silent for a while in the meetings, they said music. So I'm kind of going to do 1 week music, 1 week no music. If you have any input on it, you can tell me after the meeting. And I'm going to say does someone want to say the set aside prayer? RJ, are you there with the set aside prayer?
I got it, Tyla.
Good, go on. Would you say it for the general information?
Yes. God, please enable me to set aside everything I think I know for an open mind and a new experience. Help me see the truth about this book, the meetings, the 12 steps, and my disease.
Okay, here we go. Okay. Okay, welcome everyone again. Welcome to the Big Book Awakening Workshop. I want to give you a little rundown about what tonight is going to be like. We just did the first assignment as outlined in the Big Book Awakening and in the sponsorship assignment guide, which I hope all of you are using and having the people you're working with use also. When I'm taking people through the work, I want the person I'm taking through, whether it's my step partner or a sponsee, to use the sponsorship assignment guide so they get used to using it. So when they sponsor, they have it laid out. So tonight we're going to cover the first assignment, which is a circle and triangle, the contents, the four words, the preface. And I want to let you know, I know a lot of you did the unmanageability or the tornado exercises homework. In the open discussion tonight, you can discuss anything that you did as homework. You can discuss circle and triangle, you can discuss a forward, you can discuss something from the unmanageability or the tornado. So as we talk tonight, something may spark with you that you might want to share about. So I wanted to let you know that. We ask that the sharing is kept to 3 minutes so that more people can share, because we want to have a lot of time for you to have a group experience. Like I said last week, it's going to be an experience with your Big Book Awakening. It's going transcribing. It's going to be experience with a 1-2-3 questionnaire. It's going to be experience with your step guide or your sponsor going through that. And it will be an experience with a group experience and with Joe and I. But the group experience is very, very important. So as we go forward tonight, listen to see if anything, like I said, sparks you that you want to share about. And now I want to turn it over to my partner, Joe C.
Hi, everyone. I'm Joe C. I'm a crystal meth addict and alcoholic. How's everyone doing? So we are both going to share tonight, like Tyler just said. So I'm going to start with a little bit about my story prior to BBA, getting into circle and triangle and the table of contents. So prior to my exposure to the Big Book Awakening, I had been in and out of the program. I mentioned this last week, and I'll probably mention it again in Bill's story, so you get to hear it a few times. In and out of the program for several years. Going to meetings, going to treatment. I had been to 9 different treatment centers, several different sober livings. And I had a lot of experience with actually what didn't work. So, but what I was hearing in the rooms, I feel like I had somewhat of a first step understanding, a first step experience prior to even knowing what the first step was really about. And I think that in my own experience, I didn't really know what was wrong with me for a long time. I didn't know what the program was. I just knew what treatment taught me. So here I am going to treatment centers and learning Gorski, and I'm learning relapse warning signs. You know, if I could ever prevent a relapse, don't you think I would have? But I learned all this stuff in treatment and process groups. And, you know, it made me feel smart. It made me feel like, oh, I had a lot of self-knowledge, and I ran with that for as much as I can. I tell you one story with that. I used to have this bag that I would keep a little, like a little satchel, because they were cute at the time and it was very popular. It was like a little handbag that would go across. And I had all my Gorski work in it. And I had all my relapse warning signs, because we would go through these process groups and it would tell you what your relapse warning signs, and you were supposed to keep yourself sober. You were supposed to catch the warning sign before you would relapse, you know, and this was recovery to me. And so I had my warning sign cards, and I kept them in this book bag with my little tokens, because I had a number of 30, 60, 90-day tokens. I lost the bag when I was tweaking in the bushes, you know? So that's how well relapse prevention worked for me, you know? It just didn't work, you know? So I had a lot of ideas. I would sit in treatment centers, I'd read the Big Book. I had sponsors. I lived with 2 sponsors, and I'd go to a lot of meetings. And the message I would hear from the meetings consistently was, read the book, work the steps, call your sponsor, and go to meetings. Right? Go to meetings, read the book, work the steps, and call your sponsor. And the confusing thing here was, I had been to 90 meetings in 90 days. I was going to meetings. I would leave the meeting and get loaded. You know, I see people go to more meetings than me, get loaded, get drunk. What the fuck? I had a sponsor. I lived with 2 sponsors. You know, I smoked meth in my sponsor's bathroom. And the other sponsor, he took me through the steps up to We did a fifth step and I went out on that one too and he kicked me out. So living with sponsors didn't work for me, you know? Going through the book, reading the book in treatment. I kept a big book in my car at some point and I keep baggies in it. And it got me out of some trouble sometime when a cop pulled me over and I said, oh no, I'm in the program, there's my book. But if he had looked in my book, he just saw a baggie of meth, you know? And that's just the way it was. I had needles in my pocket and the baggies everywhere. But, and that was the program to me. And, so what they're telling me, what the program is go to meetings, work the steps, call your sponsor. I'm doing these things and I'm not getting well. And I'm seeing people that have the same sponsor as me and I'm seeing them get better and I'm seeing them striving in this program and growing and getting sober. And I felt like I was getting worse and I was dying in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous early on for a long time. And never really knowing and having a structure of the program. So at my 10th treatment center, in that treatment center, I was introduced to the Big Book Awakening, and going through this process and looking at the title page, it opened the whole program up to me. Just looking at that simple little circle and triangle, you know, opened up the entire program to me and gave me some hope. And for a person like me who've been in and out for so long, you know, I'm on the phone to treatment centers calling them for help with a pipe in my mouth, you know, and they're telling me you have to have 3 days before you can come in here. And I'm like, well, how the fuck am I supposed to do that? Why do you think I'm on the phone with you? I'm coming in hot, you know? And so I had to lie to them to get into treatment because I couldn't stay sober. And the meetings weren't working for me. And the sponsor wasn't working for me. And just reading this book wasn't working for me. And so, sitting down with someone finally and looking at this program for what it is. And so why don't we turn to the title page? If you're with me, you can turn to the title page and I'm going to start on that. And just opening the title page, you know, the promises are on page 83 in this book. There are several promises in the fifth step. When we're going through this, you're going to see how many promises are throughout this book. There's promises everywhere. Bill's story, the second half of Bill's story has like the most promises. And, there's promises everywhere. And even on the title page, opening this, if I know I'm an alcoholic or an addict, and I know what I'm suffering from is alcoholism, the very first thing that this book tells me is the story of how many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism. And that's a promise right there. Anything that gives me hope in this program is a promise, okay? Now, the circle and triangle were taken out for, I'm just going to say it, copyright complications. There were some issues going on. They decided to cease using it. So it was removed after a third edition. If you have an early third edition, you'll see it's still in the book. And I had one and I lost it. I don't know where. But in the first, second, and the early third editions, it will still be there. But they take it in and out after that in the fourth. So, you still see it on every token. So what was brought to me, what they asked me, is do I know, you know, where do I find unity in this program? I find unity in the fellowship, okay? Unity is in the fellowship. It's the meeting before the meeting. It's the meeting after the meeting. It's coffee. It's the commitment to the groups, you know? It's anything I do with the fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous is that part of the program, is the unity. And where am I at in the unity portion? How many meetings am I going to? These are the questions I would ask myself when I was asked, and I would ask you to consider yourself. Now, the only requirement to be a member, the third tradition says, is a desire to stop drinking, right? That's the only thing I need to be in that part of the fellowship. On page 24 in the big book, it tells me that the most powerful desire to stay sober is of absolutely no avail. And what that tells me is that that having met the only requirement to be a member is not, never has been, and never will be the only requirement for me to stay sober for good. That there's many requirements and many musts in this program for me to be a member, a participant in the recovery process. But for me to occupy a seat in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, the only thing I need is a desire to stay sober, okay? That's the unity portion. So where am I in unity? The recovery, you know, where I find recovery is in the 12 steps, okay? In the big book, to page 164, as outlined in the big book, is where I find the recovery portion of this program. And the question here would be, you know, where am I at in recovery? Am I working 10 and 11? Where am I at in the step work? And seeing this program come alive in the lives of people, manifested in the eyes and the way they're living their lives, these words in this book aren't going to mean much until I see it being lived by the people in this program, by the people that I work with, by the people that have worked with me, my sponsor, a walking big book, you know, a person that's living these promises, that this is where it has meaning in my life. But where I find the recovery process, recovery program is in the steps, okay? And then service, you know, to me, I never had a message to carry. It's carrying the message to other alcoholics, right? Carrying the message, being of service. I didn't even have a message to carry until I worked the steps and had a spiritual awakening. So in order to get that, I had to get to the recovery process to get to a place where I could even carry a message to others. And the service portion of this program is working with others. And I'm going to tell you, there's a difference in being in this program for, you know, 13 years, and a lot of you have been in this program for a long time. There's a difference between a coffee commitment and taking someone through the steps. A coffee commitment, I'm going to have a caffeine experience. And taking someone through the steps, I'm going to have a spiritual experience. And that's just the way it is. There's a difference between those two. And any service I'm doing to the fellowship, if you're new, that's fine. If that's what you can do, that's fine. But that service is part of the fellowship, is part of the unity. And that the service portion of this triangle of taking people through the steps is taking people through the way I've been taken through, right? So here I'm seeing, going through this circle and triangle, a program with three parts. Right? The unity part, the recovery part, and the service part. And looking back on my story, and I look at the situations I've been in and the people I've worked with, and I'm going to meetings and I'm thinking, and I'm in three parts of the program because I'm being of service to the meeting. I'm in a meeting. I think I'm in the recovery process, and I'm reading the book with my sponsor. I think I'm in all three parts. And really what I'm in is in one of three, sometimes maybe two of three parts, but I've never been in all three parts of a program. So here I am expecting the results of all three parts of a program when really I'm in only one part. Now you see my dilemma is I've been awakened to what I really need to be in the program. And I see that I have never been in the program, you know, and this provides me the most of the freedom that I experience in this program has been in the beginning of this book and in the first step. That's just for me because of the trauma that I experienced with not being able to stay sober. I got so much freedom from the structure laid out of what is the problem and what is wrong. What is wrong with me, and how do I fix it, right? So then they told me that there's a part of the program for each part of my disease. What do I do about the body, the cravings of the body? I bring my body to the meetings, right? I bring my body to the fellowship, and the message to my body is just don't drink no matter what. The message I hear in the rooms, yes, just don't drink no matter what. That is, it's ludicrous to someone like me. If I could just not drink or not use no matter what, I wouldn't be here. If I could pull that off, if I could do that, I wouldn't be in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you very much. I wouldn't have a problem, you see, because I wouldn't lose control. I would just stop, all right? But I can't do that. But that's the message to my body. The message to my body is just don't drink no matter what. If I never put alcohol or drugs in my system, I will never experience the physical craving. So what can I do with the mind? I take the obsessions of the mind, the thing that always gets me back, right? The thing that always takes me back to drinking and drugging again. I take the obsessions of the mind through the recovery process. You know, bring the body and the mind will follow. That's what we're talking about here. So I bring the body to the fellowship. I bring the mind through the steps. And having had a spiritual awakening, I take my awakened spirit out there to be of service to all God's kids, especially alcoholics. Sickened emotions from a sickened spirit gets recovered into an awakened spirit, right? Now, that's a part of the program for each part of my disease. And the circle means together as one, all right? So I've always lived in three dimensions. I've always lived in three parts. I've lived in the cravings of the body, the obsessions of the mind, or sickened emotions coming from a sickened spirit. And sometimes I wasn't using, I was in a dry time or I was in a couple weeks and I wasn't feeling the physical craving because the craving only happens when you put it in your body. But, and then there was times when maybe I wasn't experiencing the obsession, but I was never free from the sickened emotions coming from the sickened spirit. I was always in one or all three of those things, you know? And this program, the promise here is that I could put a dot in the center of that circle and triangle and that my body, my mind, and my spirit can be whole. And they could be operating in a fourth dimension of existence beyond the physical craving, beyond the mental obsession, and beyond the sickened emotions from the sickened spirit. And I could recover from this in a fourth dimension of existence. And that I'm seeing right here on the title page. And that brings someone like me who cannot stay sober or get sober so much freedom and so much hope in a hopeless state, you know? And so there's a promise right there. I'm gonna go over to the table of contents. I'm trying to time myself because
Tyler's, that was so good.
Tyler's got a lot to cover.
No.
So I'm moving a little fast. I'm sorry. I hope you guys can understand me. I'm a little fast talker. There's so much more in that, you know. There's so much more in that. But this is how the program opened up to me, you know. And this is what the Big Book Awakening and this little book here, how it opened up the program to me of someone who was in the program. And me and Tyler were talking about this earlier. And I was like, you know, I was going to meetings completely hopeless. I was still completely hopeless going to the meetings and working with sponsors and stuff like that. And I was waiting for the shoe to drop. I didn't even take a chip until I was a year sober this last time because I was just waiting for the obsession to come back, you know? And that's what happened in my story. But so the table of contents now, this, the way it's laid out, we're going to do it. This is like a textbook, right? And it's a textbook is designed to transmit information on the assumption that you and I don't know anything about the topic. And if we knew anything about staying sober, we wouldn't be here and we wouldn't need this book, but we don't. So here we go. And I think it's Joe and Charlie, they go a little bit further and they say, this book is a textbook mm-hmm. designed to transmit a spiritual experience. And that's what it's gonna do here. Just like a textbook, if I'm gonna do algebra, I need to learn how to do addition and subtraction first. So telling someone to go home and start and how it works or to go home and start writing inventory before we've gone through the beginning of this book, I think that's crazy. All right. I need to start in the beginning of this book. And a lot of people, I don't know that if they even use this book, know where steps 1 and 2 are because the big book doesn't even say it's at a step until we're at step 3. So looking at this table of contents, we're going to take it just like a textbook or like a doctor. I go to the doctor. I got to get a diagnosis. I got to know what's wrong with me. And then I got to get a prescription. And then I got to get instructions on how to use that prescription. And just like that, we're going to get the diagnosis in the first step, which is the preface, the doctor's opinion, through more about alcoholism, and there's 3 pages in We Agnostic, 44, 45, and 52 that we use for step 1. That's all step 1. Step 2, the solution or the prescription, we're gonna get in We Agnostics. Steps 3 and 4 are in How It Works. Into Action has steps 5 through 11, and Working With Others is step 12. This is gonna lay out the big book to me and how we're gonna go through this book like a textbook and answer the questions and take the test and look at the quizzes and go back and check the promises and use them to see if that we're really experiencing this program and if it's our experience, okay? Any questions? All right, I'm gonna turn it over to Tyler because he's gonna move on into the next section.
Thank you, Joe, that was great. Okay, now we're gonna go to the preface. I wanna say one thing before we go, if you guys will turn back, I hope you guys are following us in your big books and not just listening because you will absorb it more as you look at it. I see Donna is, you know what I mean? So I hope all of you are because you'll absorb it more as you look at it. But I want to go back to the title page of Alcoholics Anonymous, the story of how many thousand men and women. I just want to point one thing out. If you'll turn back to that, if you look opposite that page, it says other books. Do you guys see that? See that, Donna? It says, I want to read the first one, 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, an interpretive commentary on the AA program by a co-founder. The 12 and 12 was never meant to do the steps by, and people are killing alcoholics and addicts by taking them through the 12 and 12. If you want to do it with the big book, go do it with the big book. But the big book is the only basic text of the recovery program of everything in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know how many pamphlets we have in books? Tons of them. There's not one basic text for the recovery program except the big book, and it's not the 12 and 12. 12 and 12 has great stuff, don't misunderstand me, but it was never meant to take someone through the steps in. Okay, now that I said that, let's go over to the preface. Joe covered that this is an experience. I'm going to show you what I read with the people that I take through, and you can mark it in your big book because I don't read everything. If I have someone that has more time, I may read way more of the forewords, but a new person, this is what I read. Okay, so the second paragraph, the preface, because this book has become the basic text for our society. There it is, basic text. A textbook is a book that's meant to be studied. Has helped such large numbers of alcoholics, men and women, to recovery. There exists a strong sentiment against any radical changes being made in it. Therefore, the first portion of this volume, describing the AA recovery program, has been left largely untouched in the course of revisions made by the second, third, and fourth editions. The section called the doctor's opinion has been kept intact, just as it was originally written in 1939 by the late Dr. William D. Silkworth, our society's great medical benefactor. You know, the doctor's opinion was taken out of the numbers, I think, after the second or third edition, and put into Roman numerals. Because Dr. Silkworth was not an alcoholic, of course, you know, I think it was a big mistake. But I want to point this out to you because it's very important. We want to send, I tell people many times, go read the first 164 pages before we're going to talk about working together and the recovery program. I need to tell them, read the doctor's opinion and the first 164 pages, because they will skip the doctor's opinion, which is so important. Okay. Now I want to go over to the second, to the last paragraph of the preface. Turn your page over. I want to go over the last paragraph where it says, all changes made over the years in the big book, AA's fond nickname for this volume, have had the same purpose: to represent the current memberships of Alcoholics Anonymous more accurately, and thereby to reach more alcoholics. If you have a drinking problem, we hope that you may pause in reading one of the 42 personal stories and think, yes, that happened to me. Or more important, yes, I felt that way. Or more important, yes, I believe this program can work for me. These three questions need to be answered somewhere in the first two steps. We will look at answering them in the first part of There Is a Solution. But this is the way that they went through the stories, and this is the way we go through the text, because the whole book is the recovery program, including the stories. But the first 164 pages is the step work. So this is the way we go through. Is that me? Did that happen to me? Did I drink like that? Did I think like that? Did I feel like that? Asking myself those questions turns the big book into an experience rather than just knowledge. Okay, I want to go over to the foreword to the first edition. And I read the first paragraph. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered. Now, you guys, you know, we could spend a whole meeting on what recovered means and are we really recovered? I am Tyla, and I am a recovered alcoholic and addict. And my God-given sobriety date is December 26, 1989. Okay. I'm sorry. 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. The minute that I walk into a meeting, most of the time, you are walking into hope. You are turning away from death, and you are walking into hope. My seemingly hopeless state of mind and body begins to have hope when I begin to sit in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. For them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. We think the account of our experience will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic and addict. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic addict is a very sick person. And when I'm working with people, I say, do I, Tyla, right now reading this book, comprehend it? Because you see, Harry Thiebaud talked about the rebuilding of the ego, the resurgence of the ego. Lots of people that were in the founding of this program talked about it. The ego, and I see it in my own life. That's why I do all 12 steps every couple of years. I used to do it every year. But the one thing that treats that is going through the steps. And the main thing is the first step in this book, to me, treats the resurgence of the ego. It brings me back down to right size. When I begin to get up there sometimes, I don't know if you guys ever feel like that, but I do. And I need to get down to being right size in a healthy way, not putting down, but healthy. Many do not comprehend the alcoholic as a very sick person. And besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. Our way to quit drinking, our way of living. If they didn't say our way to quit drinking, the way I live is what will get me back to a drink or a drug. Underneath everything I do, underneath stealing those paper clips from my office or flirting with that married guy, all of those things that bring me shame and guilt and hurt me, underneath that is a drink or a drug. I'm not saying I'm living this friggin' Puritan life. The book knows, this big book, people that wrote this book knows we're gonna make mistakes. That's why they have 10 and 11, so that we can clean it up. but we better clean it up, because if we're going to leave that stuff dangling and hanging around us for too long, those little termites are going to eat the foundation of our recovery and we will fall through the damn cracks. Okay. Now I'm going to go to the second edition. Forward to the second edition. Okay. I start when I'm taking people through with the bottom of the first page, where it says the spark that was to flare in the first AA group was struck in Akron, Ohio in June 1935 during a talk between a New York stockbroker, Bill W., and an Akron physician, Dr. Bob. 6 months earlier, the broker had been relieved of his drink obsession by a sudden spiritual experience following a meeting with an alcoholic friend, Ebby Thatcher, who became Bill's sponsor, and who was a member of the Oxford group, who had been in contact with the Oxford groups of that day. He had also been greatly helped by the late William D. Silkworth, a New York specialist in alcoholism, who is now accounted no less than a medical saint in AA by AA members. Can you guys hear, Joe, can you hear me okay? Okay, someone let me know if you can. In by AA members and whose story of the early days of our society appears in the next pages. From this doctor, the broker had learned the grave nature of alcoholism. I love they use the word grave nature, because the nature of this disease is spiritual. It is a spiritual malady, is the nature of this disease, and going untreated long enough can put me in the grave. Though he could not accept all the tenets of the Oxford group, he was convinced of the need for moral inventory, confession of personality defects, restitution to those harmed, helpfulness to others, and the necessity of belief in and dependence upon God. Now, you know, you can flip over to page 263 in your book, which I hope you would flip over with me to 263, and we can look at the tenets of the Oxford group. I'm sorry, it's taking me a minute here. Okay, 263, it gives us the six-step program of the Oxford group. Number one, complete deflation. Number two, dependence and guidance from a higher power. Number three, moral inventory. Number four, confession. Number five, restitution. And number six, continued to work with other alcoholics. There is some controversy around this, and I just want to share it with you guys, because Bill admitted complete defeat in Bill's story on page 11. So they say he couldn't go with deflation, ego, at depth. He admitted it. He said he admitted it on page 11 to Ebby. To me, what I think Bill had the hardest time with four absolutes, because there was a lot of controversy in writing the book. Bill didn't want the four absolutes: absolute honesty, absolute unselfishness, absolute love, and absolute purity, purity of motives. And he said no alcoholic could live by that, which I agree with him 100%. But I think that's what Bill couldn't really get his teeth into, was that. And that was called the tenets of the Oxford group. So I think that this is just a controversy, and I thought I'd throw a little controversy out there for you. But so that's one of them. So I'm going to read the next paragraph. Prior to his journey to Akron, the broker had worked hard with many alcoholics on the theory that only an alcoholic could help an alcoholic, but he had succeeded only in keeping sober himself. The broker had gone to Akron on a business venture, which had collapsed, leaving him greatly in fear that he might start drinking again. He suddenly realized that in order to save himself, he must carry his message to another alcoholic. That alcoholic turned out to be the Akron physician. Well, when Bill was in Towns Hospital with Dr. Silkworth three times. On the third time, he got sober. And when he left there, he was pulling drunks out of bars and out of the streets. And he was trying to work with tons of people. And then 6 month period, he never got anybody sober. But Lois was the one that said to him, yes, you didn't get anybody sober, Bill, but look at yourself. You're sober yourself, right? And so he saw that. And he went back to Dr. Silkworth, and he said to Dr. Silkworth, what am I doing wrong? I'm not getting anybody sober. And Dr. Silkworth told him to quit preaching at the drunks. He was giving them too much God and not enough of the hardcore medical facts of the obsession of the mind and physical craving. So he wasn't giving them enough of that. And that's what Dr. Silkworth told him. So when Bill wasn't working a lot then, and Bill needed to make some money. So he went there to do a business deal in Akron. And when he went there to do that business deal, he was at the Mayflower Hotel. The business deal fell through. And Bill, that was pacing after the business deal in the evening, pacing in the hallway, looking down at the end of the hallway at a bar. And he was scared. And he went to the phone booth to make some calls. He was going to look for a minister or a reverend or someone to call to try to find another alcoholic. This is another little bit of controversy. And I've read tons of books on the history. There's a couple things that are different. And so I'm going to tell you a little bit of the different one, a little bit of what I think happened. See, the Oxford group was a fundamental Christian fellowship that worked in houses. They didn't have a church and they were fabulous. And the things that they did have changed, they did a thing called soul surgery. That's what the six-step program was about, soul surgery. And the whole essence was that to let God manage your life, okay? So when they went somewhere, just like if I said to Donna, oh, I'm going to Florida. And I say, Donna, let me give you some numbers of a couple of my AA friends down there, right? We connect people anywhere they go, right? The Oxford group was the same way. And I believe they gave Bill a number of Reverend Tunk, T-U-N-K, that he called in that phone booth. And Bill liked the name Tunk because he was from Vermont, so was Dr. Bob. And they have funny lingo up there in Vermont. And the word Tunk, T-U-N-K, meant to take a dunk in the water. And Bill and Dr. Bob had funny sense of humor like that. So he really loved that. He called that guy and he asked him, he needed an alcoholic. And he said, I've got a doozy for you. And see, Tunk was a member of the Oxford group too. And he knew Henrietta Seiberling and he knew Dr. Bob. Dr. Bob was a two-year member of the Oxford group in Akron at T. Henry's house. It was a very strong Akron group. And the Oxford group prayed for people. They knew Dr. Bob was a drunk. He took them a long time to admit it. And they were praying for him all the time. Henrietta Seiberling was the daughter-in-law of Firestone Tires. Okay. She lived in the gatehouse, but when Tunk gave Bill, I know this is a lot of information, but I just love this stuff. You guys, I just have to share it with you because these stories just touch my heart. And when Tunk gave Bill the number of Henrietta, Bill thought it was the wife of Firestone and he was terrified to call. It'd be like calling Betty Ford. So he was scared, but he finally got the courage to call. Henrietta was a real strong member of the Oxford group. She wasn't an alcoholic. She was just someone that really dedicated the spiritual way of life. And she knew and praying for Dr. Bob that God would answer the prayers. And when Bill called her, she picked up the phone and she said, he told her why he was calling. He was looking for another drunk. And she said, I've been waiting for your call. This is manna from heaven. She didn't have any doubt that God would answer this call. So she connected Bill to meet with Dr. Bob. It was June 10th, the next day when she talked to him. And the next day was June 10th, Mother's Day. And Dr. Bob got drunk on his ass and couldn't show up. So they met the next day and Dr. Bob told Ann, I am not going to talk to this guy more than 20 minutes. And they talked for hours. And what Bill brought Dr. Bob had the solution. He had the spiritual solution, but he didn't understand the problem. He didn't understand the disease and everything changed. This is such an important meeting. And I hope that all of you can see the hand of God in the beginning of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what excites me so much. There's no way in the world that Bill W. wouldn't even go to coffee with Dr. Bob. The personalities were so different, but because they had this common problem and they had this common thing they shared, they were a great combination. And God knew what this fellowship needed to make it work. He had a hard driver, broker from New York that was a power driving promoter. And he had this incredible spiritual doctor from Akron, Ohio, that was gentle, slower, more spiritual, that could help balance Bill's hard drivenness. And these guys became like brothers. And Bill went and stayed at Dr. Bob's house for 3 or 4 months before he went back to New York. And they started right away to be thinking of what they were going to do. So I'm going to read some more. So that's some of the history there. This physician had repeatedly tried spiritual means to resolve his alcoholic dilemma, but had failed. But when his broker, when the broker gave Dr. Silkworth's description of alcoholism and its hopelessness, the physician began to pursue the spiritual remedy for his malady with a willingness he had never before been able to muster. He sobered never to drink again till the moment of his death in 1950. This seemed to prove that one alcoholic could affect another as no non-alcoholic could. It also indicated that strenuous work One alcoholic with another was vital to permanent recovery. And whenever they use that word vital, that means life-giving. You know, when you go in, and you know, Rick, because you're a nurse, you go in and you go to get something checked, you know, if you go in the emergency room, they're going to take your vitals. And I always love to see how many times they use that. But it's so I have to say to myself, you know, do I, because, you know, I have long-term sobriety, and don't think, you know, that it's not, to me, can be very dangerous. Mark Houston said the having long-term sobriety, the biggest noose around his neck was how many people he sponsored and how much time he had in the program. And I love that. And I have to work my program, I believe, harder the longer I'm sober, because the disease is progressive and my recovery better be progressive. It better be ahead of this, because even though the physical and the mental has stopped, it's been removed, the spiritual has not. The spiritual is still progressive, and I need to stay ahead of that. So I want to say a few things. Let me see what time it is. I want to say a few things about, they talk about Clarence Schneider here, and I want to tell you a few things. Bill claims that he was the first AA meeting was in New York. I have to tell you, the first AA meeting was in Cleveland. And because Bill and Clarence Schneider, and I love Clarence Schneider, and if you guys haven't read the book, How It Worked, you should read the book, How It Worked, sometime, because it's incredible. It is the life story of what happened in Cleveland. Nowhere in the United States did recovery happen like it did in Cleveland. Clarence Schneider was 34, 35 when he came to Dr. Bob. Dr. Bob sponsored him. He was attending the Oxford Group meetings, right? And the Oxford Group was getting a little bit fed up with alcoholics, you know, and alcoholics were knowing they weren't really clicking in the Oxford Group so much. They wanted their own place to go. And Clarence Schneider was a Catholic, and there were a lot of Catholics coming up from Cleveland to the Akron Oxford Group. And the church said, no, the Catholics cannot go to this Christian fellowship. They did not want them there. So Clarence said, fine. Clarence was from Cleveland. Clarence left. He said, that's okay. And he went to Cleveland to start the first AA meeting. And I have to tell you, I want to tell you some of the stats about Cleveland, because they're going to talk later on in the second forward, they're going to talk about the percentage of recoveries. They had a 75% recovery rate, 50% right away, 25% with some relapse, and then they stayed sober too. And we have a 6% recovery rate. And I think it's a good thing to look at and to say, what the hell's happening here? And what can we do about it? What can I do about it? So Clarence Schneider, I want to read you some of the things that Clarence did. So he started the first AA meeting, okay? And the name came from the basic text. From 1935 to 1939, and the Cleveland had the first AA group after breaking up from the Oxford group. From 1939 to 1940, they had 400 to 500 members. They had the fastest growing fellowship and the fastest growing recovery rates. They had the first central office, which all central offices kind of geared themselves after. They had the first H&I panels. They had the first pamphlet on sponsorship. They had workshops. They were so big in Cleveland, they were doing workshops for 50 to 100 people, taking them through the 12 steps. 20 years later, someone went and researched the original 400 to 500 members, the original ones. They researched them 20 years later, and they had a 93% sober rate 20 years later. That's phenomenal, you guys. And they were when Cleveland was going, Clarence Schneider had a 97% recovery rate. No one had that. So it does, I'm saying this to inspire you maybe to read How It Worked, because it's to see what was going on in Cleveland that was so different. And I think that one of the biggest problems today is sponsorship. And with better sponsorship, every problem in AA could be resolved. But I think sponsorship is a little bit weak. So I talked about that, and I talked about the recovery rate, and I want to go over to, I love the end of this. This is the end of the forward to the second edition. At present, our membership is pyramiding at the rate of about 20% a year. So far, upon the total problem of several million actual and potential alcoholics in the world, we have made only a scratch. In all probability, we shall never be able to touch more than a fair fraction of the alcoholic problem in all its ramifications. Upon therapy, for the alcoholic himself, we surely have no monopoly. Yet it is our great hope that all those who have as yet found no answer may begin to find one in the pages of this book and will presently join us on the high road to a new freedom. Okay, I want to share one more thing with you about the books, okay? If you look, I'm not going to go on all the stats, but if you look at the growth of Alcoholics Anonymous, okay? By the time the fourth edition was, second edition, they had approximately two books to every member, 2 to 1, okay? By the fourth edition, they had 10 big books to every member. The fellowship grew so much greater than the people that were doing the recovery program in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That should give us some indication of the problems that we have with the percentage of recovery. They had 10 big books to every member. That is crazy. And they still were publishing the big books. So I wanted to share that with you to see that the fellowship has outgrown it, because it has outgrown the amount of people doing the big book. And I think that's sad. So I have one more thing I want to read and I'm done. And we're going to have an open discussion meeting. Okay. And I want to read to you the backside of the foreword to the fourth edition. If you will turn over to the backside of it. Okay. While our literature has preserved the integrity of the AA message, sweeping changes in society as a whole are reflected in new customs and practices within the fellowship. Taking advantage of technological advances, for example, AA members with computers can participate in meetings online, sharing with fellow alcoholics across the country around the world. Boy, they didn't know how much we would need that. In any meeting anywhere, AA share experience, strength, and hope with each other in order to stay sober and help other alcoholics modem to modem or face to face. AA speak the language of the heart in all its power and simplicity. Thank you. Want to open it up for sharing? You guys, like I said, you can share on unmanageability, tornado, or anything that was part of the homework. I'd love to hear from the group. Who would like to share?
I'll go first.
Okay, great.
My name's Dean. I'm an alcoholic. I'll go just because I'm scared.
Hi, Dean.
I just want to get it out of the way.
Hi, Dean.
Okay, so like, hi, on my paper, like it had 3 lines. And so I thought it was going to be this quick answer and it was going to be whippy, quicky, snap, snap. But no, on question 8, it took up the entire paper. But the thing that made the most sense to me was alcohol being no respecter of person, place, or economic or social value. That's what made the most sense to me. And then what really got to me was in the workbook itself. When I was reading it, it has stated that not to make the process basically my God, that making mm-hmm. the big book and the process, it told me not to use that as my higher power, because I find that I do that, that for me as an agnostic, that I kind of worship the process. That's what I do. I want to do the process. And so going through the reading, I really enjoyed my highlighting. And I actually did like the transcribing part of it. It was very interesting, but I did not enjoy making the mistakes. I got very frustrated during that part.
Thank you, honey. Thanks for sharing. Who would like to share? You want to unmute and share?
Hi, my name is Annette. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Annette.
Thank you, Tyler and Joe. You guys did amazing. When I answered that question, I put number 8. What hit me the most was that, you know, the best help for any alcoholic is another alcoholic. And in the foreword of the second edition, they talk so much about how Abby helped Bill helped Bob. I didn't even have anywhere in there that Clarence guy. And I'm so fascinated. I want to read how it worked to find out more about him, because I really like the history also. But just that we individually can help one another, whereas nobody else can, because they don't have that part of their soul or heart that we have, that we can reach out and we feel one another. And that was amazing, you guys. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. And you know, I wanted to say something. As Joe was saying so well about all of his times in treatment and having the relapse prevention cards and all of that, and last week I reminded you that, you know, I have a disease that is beyond human aid. And treatment centers sometimes do not think that we are beyond human aid. And they will treat the alcoholism and the addiction like human aid will work. You know, like relapse cards. Are you kidding me? I would use it to cut up my cocaine. Who would like to share? Yeah, Tina's laughing. Tina, you want to share? Hi, honey. Good to see you.
Hi, I'm an alcoholic. I probably would have used the cards for that too. you know, what really, and the homework, what stood out to me was, there's two things. One that you said while you were talking, and that was, look at God's hands through the whole process of how AA started. And that was something I never even thought of, you know, to think about how or where God was in the whole process. And then as far as the homework goes, number four, the promise is that if action is taken in all three areas, I can be whole. And what does that mean to me? It goes two ways. Right now, I feel like I am blocked. Something is blocking me from some part. I don't know really what that is. And I was talking to Pat T about it last night. But what I had also wrote down was, what it does mean to me is that I'm out of myself and helping others. And it's that getting that being blocked, and praying that for God to reveal to me what it is that's blocking me from and I don't even know what he's blocking me from. I just feel like I'm blocked, if that makes sense to anybody. But he asked me what surrender means. And to me, in the picture of my head, surrender is getting down on your knees and just surrendering. And to me, there's a blockage there too. So I've got a lot of work. And thank you for having this.
Thank you, Tina. Who, any of the guys there with Jerry want to share at the conference table? Come on, we want to hear from you.
Hey, Tyler.
Hi, Jerry.
Jerry, an alcoholic, and all the boys. I love going back into that section and just revisiting what the original, what Bill and Bob and the people of that time went through in order just to get sober. And we find ourselves, you know, pre-COVID, we have over 600 meetings a week up here in Santa Clara County. And it's no big, you have no excuse to not chase this as if you were dying. And I think we get complacent sometimes and just kind of say, yeah, I'll go to a meeting tomorrow, wherever. These people were living it and just, it was everything. I think we lose sight of that sometimes. And this really just sets back into me the need to keep this. You know, I've got some time in and I get complacent. And what you said really hit home as far as the noose around your neck. And it just struck a chord with me of keeping really close to the program as it was when I was first getting sober. It was everything, and it still is everything. It's number one in my life with God, but I think I've lost a little bit of the intensity. So I appreciate you bringing this stuff up and getting back to the front of the book. And then working with other people, it's I've taken sponsees through and reading it, but not to the level of doing it in the BBA. You know, I've only gone through it once, and this just takes it to a whole other level. So I'm really excited to share newcomers and change those numbers that you talked about, you know, really impact. So thank you.
Thank you so much. You know, one of the things I want to say is when they had a 75% recovery rate, they had one meeting a week and one book. That's it. And they had a 75% recovery rate. So it shows me a lot that it was in the sponsorship. The sponsorship was so strong in Cleveland. That's another reason I hope that you'll look at the book. Who would like to share?
I'll share. Anne Marie.
I'll share.
Okay, Marie.
Oh, go ahead, Donna.
You can go ahead, Marie.
Well,
okay. Thank you, Tyler and Joe, for amazing information. And I mean, I love working with others, and you know, it's in the homework, you know, it asks if I'm working with others, and you know, if what I'm doing is effective, and you know, what I mean, how I sponsor people is, you know, I make commitments and I keep them, and I treat other people like I would want to be treated. And then I follow the guidance of the big book, Awakening, and throw things by my sponsor if I come to a place where I don't know what to do. But And I have sponsees that have quit, and I have sponsees that are doing great. So, but I'm sober. I haven't thought about taking a drink for a long time. And I just also wanted to talk about, you know, that the first promise is that if I take or action in these three areas, I can be whole. And what does that mean to me? And what it means to me is that my mind, body, and spirit can be as one and live in the fourth dimension of existence. And what that means for me is that, you know, I used to, I have crazy thoughts in my head, and I used to act on all of them. You know, I just did, and life was miserable. And they come, and I just rely totally on God. You know, I ask God in the morning to direct my thinking so I don't have as many crazy thoughts. And then I ask God for inspiration and intuition if I'm at a place where I don't know what to do. But, and the biggest thing for me is just not, it is a miracle that I don't actually just act anymore. I mean, I am living in another dimension, because that was me, even in AA. You know, I was in AA I've been in AA for 34 years. And I was 13 years sober when I got here. So I had a couple relapses, but I never was totally balanced, and I was still crazy. And so being able, you know, I feel like God is just working with me. Like, I'll have a crazy thought and I won't act on it, but then I'll use the golden key exercise on that. And it just changes my relationship with people. And so I'm just so excited. I mean, you guys blew me away today, Joe and Tyler, and I'm so excited to be here and go through this work again, and hopefully take somebody else through too. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Donna?
Hey, everybody. Donna, recovered alcoholic. And, you know, Tyler, I had to have an open mind to go through this work. But I got to tell you, the gratitude I felt, because I was in my first year, maybe 6 months, and I was taken through the work. And so writing this over again, just, I was so moved that I felt I had an experience with the writing, and I immediately called Loretta and I thanked her, because I feel like this is top shelf AA work. I don't know how else to say it. And, you know, like a lot of us, you know, I look at when Bill met Bob, and you know, Bill met Ebby and Dr. Silkworth, and then met Bob, like God's hand was all in that.
Mm-hmm.
And the dedication that these early AA members had, you know, it you know, you hear all these crazy slogans in the meetings, it's a selfish program. They weren't shit.
It's not.
Selfish at all. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we didn't touch on it, but when I do read this book, in the preface, it says they want to hear from us that are having results. Like things change for us. And I always say that the change happens in and through us, in spite of us. And, mm-hmm. you know, this book does transmit a spiritual awakening. It's not mm-hmm. the steps that keep us sober. This leads us to the one that does.
Yes.
And that vital, strenuous work. Like, you know, are we like taking other people through? You know, like I was just as selfish as an ex-alcoholic. Oh, I want to get better. And then I'm reading the book and all I keep hearing is usefulness, usefulness. Duh. Does this mean that this is what God wants from us? He wants us to rely on him and to be of service to him. That's mm-hmm. really all we do here. And we give him all our problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I really believe that God's intention was not for us to sit around miserable. He didn't save me from the lash of alcohol to sit and try to manage a life that I couldn't manage before I drank. So I'm so grateful. My story is not where I sat in the rooms for a long time sick. I'm so grateful that, and that circle and the triangle, the circle's like a wheel to me, because we're constantly evolving around that circle. We come in for the first time, we're meeting people that finally understand us, that camaraderie, that allow us to cry because we don't know how the hell we wound up here, but we feel a sense of ease and comfort for being around each other. And then the recovered alcoholic shares, because if I didn't hear the woman share that asked me, was I willing to go to any length, I wouldn't have picked up these spiritual tools. I would have been just not drinking for today. And that just seemed to be the hardest thing for me to do. I am just so grateful. Mm-hmm. And like you, Tyler, we got to do this more and more. I did the tornado, and thank God, like there's not a lot of unmanageability, but there are some areas that I need to have a deeper experience with God. And just like every other experience, I don't know where he's going to bring me next.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just so willing. And I want to thank you for doing this workshop, because I do workshops and it's kind of nice to be in yours. So
yeah, I'm so glad you do. Thank you, Don. I hope this workshop inspires the people that are in it to do workshops themselves. Jerry, would you like to share, honey? What struck you, Jerry, in your homework?
Sorry about that. I couldn't get myself off mute. Can you mute? Okay. And Joe has to turn his down. So, I've been traveling today and I just got home a little bit ago. So I haven't really been looking at this stuff, but I was looking over, you know, question 1, 2, and 3. And I'd like to say, you know, the shares are really great tonight. Your share and Joe's share was really good. So as far as like the questions go, 1, 2, and 3 is all of this stuff. You know, the first time I came into the program was in 1997. And, you know, I did all of this stuff on question 1, but as far as question 2, question 3, the step work and the service, no, I did not do that. And so what happened is I ended up going back out and getting drunk, and I stayed out for about a year. And, you know, I'm grateful for that experience of going back out, because I got to really understand exactly the depths of my disease And when I did finally make it back, I was willing at that point to actually do the step work. You know, I did step 1, 2, and 3 the first time around, and it just doesn't work. So I had the opportunity to do a 4-step inventory and a 5th step with my sponsor, and then the rest of the steps. And, you know, I stayed sober for a number of years. But, you know, the other thing that really jumped out to me is when we were talking, I think you were talking about this a little bit ago, where you have to do the steps every year. Mm-hmm. Or you have to do them at least every couple of years.
I do.
And, you know, I neglected that. I thought working with others is going to be okay. And I can, you know, get the step work through them, you know, when I go through it with a sponsee, but it's just not the case. I have to actually do this stuff for myself. So I guess it was probably about 4 years ago that I actually had to break down and get my notebook out and start an inventory. And you know what? It was a lot larger than the original 4-step that I did. I had collected up a lot of resentments that I needed to go over. So, you know, all of these questions are really good for somebody, you know, mm-hmm. especially if you're starting to do this, to go over all of these. Do I go to enough meetings? You know, I used to go to a meeting every day. I had a routine that I went through every day. I went to a meeting every day, and I was very good at the fellowship. And, you know, the fellowship will keep me sober for a little while, but it won't keep me sober forever, you know, so I have to do the rest of the stuff. You know, step work, I'm really lazy, and I'll make an excuse not to do it, but I know in order for me to live and thrive that I actually have to do it. And you know, right now, I've had a lot of sponsees at one time before, and right now I only have a couple, and one of them is really low maintenance and calls occasionally. You know, and I feel like I could probably be working with more people. And I think it would really help me if I did. So, and that's just like looking over 1, 2, and 3 right now. I guess that's all I have to share tonight. I'm kind of tired.
Thanks, Jerry. Thank you. It's good to hear from you. Who would like to share? Unmute, please.
Hi, I'm Vanessa. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Vanessa.
I almost forgot for a second there. Where am I? I'm also an Al-Anon. So thank you so much. You guys were fantastic as always, Joe and Tyla.
Thank you.
And everybody sharing. It's really great to hear everybody and see everybody's faces. I love it. I love Zoom. I love that they have the modem to modem at the end. I was thinking we're modem to modem and face to face. So it's very cool. And I love that you talked about some history today. This year during COVID, I kind of dove in as well. And one of the things, I'm going to get the book you were talking about. I have not read that, although I did go to that meeting, the Cleveland meeting, on Zoom. One of my sponsors was speaking at that meeting. It was very good. They're still up and running. And, but the book I was reading that I was really interested in was Lois Remembers. Lois's memoir, because she talks a lot about AA. It's so funny because you get some Al-Anon stuff, but you really get a lot of AA history. And from her perspective, which is so interesting. So yeah, I highly recommend that. But anyway, back to BBA. So I was really, there's a couple of things I wanted to say. Like one, I Donna and I did the tornado exercise, and it was cool. I just wanted to mention, like, kind of props for working with a step partner, because it was really cool going through that, and just like something she said, I was like, oh, I didn't even think about that, you know? And it was just like really helpful because it helped me to like consider even more than I had just doing the exercise myself. And so I found that really helpful. It's a little daunting, you know, because there's so much and you're like, okay, we got to go through this, whatever, but it's so worth it. You know, like I really got some good stuff out of that. And then I also just wanted to mention something in the reading that stuck out to me, but it wasn't something you read. Is that okay?
Sure. Okay. Oh yeah, sure.
So in the foreword to the second edition, when, and we have a note, we talk about, this is how you'll find it because my page numbers are different, but the outline of 12 traditions. And I thought it was interesting, this time it kind of stood out to me where it says, as we discovered the principles by which the individual alcoholic could live, right? So as we find those principles by which we need to live, the steps, so we had to evolve principles by which the AA groups and AA as a whole could survive and function effectively. And then it lists like these concepts. But what I thought was interesting, and I never really noticed before, was the word evolve, which is develop gradually, you know? And I just thought, wow, that's so interesting because they haven't really changed. But yet it says here that we had to evolve, and maybe he means they had to evolve them and they got there. I don't know. But I don't know if you have anything to say about that, but I like that it mentions the traditions here and in like kind of this quick form to sort of drop the seed, you know, so that we can go there. And that was one thing I did get in my questions that we did too, is that's something that I feel I could explore more in the traditions and the concepts in AA, because I do so much work in the steps. But I'm a little, if I'm looking at balance and I'm really being honest about balance, like the concepts and the traditions, I could do some concept and tradition meetings. I could, you know, do a little more work looking at those. So that was really a good thing for me to discover this time around. Thank you.
Thanks, Vanessa. Dylan, you want to share? I see you up there. Dylan.
Hi, Tyla.
Hi, Dylan.
No. Thank you guys. You know, I can't tell you how refreshing it is, to like hear some solution, you know, you know, looking at the triangle, you know, when I was talking with Joe, like I've been in and out of the program, you know, since like 2009, you know, I'm coming up on 4 years again, and I still have never been through the steps, which is like kind of weird. So I'm like really pumped about this, and like this process. Tyla, I met you, you know, like when I very first came in the rooms, and you were always, you know, so inspirational. And Joe's passion about this whole thing, and his enthusiasm, you know, it really pumps me up. And, you know, we've been talking about how God worked, you know, in the lives of these people that created this program in the 1930s. And I can see how God kind of put me right here in this meeting, you know, in this workshop right now, and kind of like how everything aligned. You know, they say that there are no coincidences. And, you know, that's kind of, you know, where I'm at, just pumped in and ready to do this thing. So thanks, guys.
Thank you so much. Who would like to share? Who would like to unmute and share?
I will. I'm Wendy.
Hi, Wendy.
Hi. Tyla, Joe and Tyla, of course, I'm not even surprised at how amazing you did, because I mean, honestly, I'm just so excited to be in this workshop and get to see you two together doing it, because I know how close you are and love each other. And even far away, we can be so connected. It's so beautiful. What stood out to me, like, you know, I kind of forgot about this, but like, I remember when I came into the BVA after going through the steps several times, different ways, throughout sobriety, I never really knew what the circle and triangle represented until I did the BVA. And when it broke it down, I just remember my mind was so blown, because I was clueless, and I had previously been in Alcoholics Anonymous for 8 years and I didn't know what it meant. I saw it on coins and I saw it on podiums, but I really didn't understand exactly what it was. And so Joe, amazing job breaking that down, because it just really there's so much to it. It's so important to know that, what the circle and triangle represents. And then in the forewords, another thing that I loved, because I used to get really confused, is when it says on the forward to the first edition, you know, that 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And I used to get confused with cured and recovered. And then sometimes I would hear people say they were recovered and I would think like, you really, no, you'll never be recovered. We're sick, we're alcoholics, we're always gonna be alcoholics. But like, you know, going through the BBA, it became crystal clear to me that there is a difference in what recovered means. And so now when I hear that, I'm really happy because when I hear people say in meetings, I'm a recovering alcoholic or recovering addict, it just seems like a red flag to me. Because it, to me, that means maybe they just haven't done the steps, you know? And another thing that you brought up too, Tyler, was sponsorship. And when I was sober for those 8 years previously, you know, I never sponsored anyone. I was super selfish. I didn't, but the point is, I didn't even know how. Like, I was so confused and I had no idea how to sponsor somebody because I didn't know where any of the steps were in the book. I didn't get it. I was like, well, I don't know how to sponsor. Like, where's step one? I just don't even get it. It doesn't say step one is here. So how do I sponsor? And so it was such a relief to come and do the Big Book Awakening work with Joe over the phone when he was in Vegas. And it was such an honor to be able to do it because I was dying in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was suicidal. I didn't know what to do. I had given up. I thought drinking and drugs don't work for me and neither does recovery. And this sucks. And I'm so screwed. And then Big Book Awakenings was introduced to me and it was such a lifesaver because it has completely changed my life. And then after doing the process, it was really clear to me that I have a complete guide on how to sponsor people now. And so the quality of sponsorship is good. And I love sponsoring people. And I have had the opportunity to do workshop and small groups of people. And I haven't stopped working with people and taking them through since I did the Big Book Awakenings. And I love doing it because it is the bright spot of my life. So thank you.
Thank you. Who would like to share? Who would like to unmute and share?
Felicia, alcoholic.
Wait, there's two. Okay, Felicia, then who else?
I was just saying it looked like Felicia had her hand up and then she jumped in.
Thank you. Felicia, go for it, honey.
Thanks, Kylie, and thank you, Tyler and Joe. You guys did a great job and it was just wonderful. I felt like a newcomer and that's a wonderful feeling just to sit and listen and learn and to just hear it with fresh ears tonight. So, and you know, a beautiful thing, just thinking about that, just providential hand of God. That got all of this started, you know. I remember coming to AA in the first place and really, once I got and really started hearing the readings and I felt like, oh, this is God. God is here in all of this. Like I started reading that big book and I was like, oh, God inspired this book. Oh, wow. And then to come to this point and to be here with all of you and read this preface once again, it makes me proud to join that number. You know, here we're reading about the first 100, but now we are part of that number. That number has grown exponentially and we are part of that number. It kind of makes me think about when the saints go marching in. It's like we are part of that number, that larger number that has grown from that first 100. And that's what I get when I read the prefaces and the forewords. I feel like a nerd because like I never like to read the forewords and the intros and the extra anything. I didn't want to read anything extra that I didn't need to read in a book ever. And I've been through a few programs. But you know what? These forewords are so beautiful. It tells me that this book was put together with love and everything here is so purposeful. So in these forewords, it tells me, you know, like our note here that tells us that, you know, the forward to step two says that the whole purpose is to tell us how it has grown to be more inclusive. And that means that it made room for people like me, you know, that it made room for women, that it made room for, I think it says at the bottom here, I have a little note, made room for people of different races and genders and lifestyles and whatnot. And I mean, all I hear when I hear that is love. There was a place for me and they were anticipating that there'd be a time and a place where I would need this. And God was already working and preparing it for me and for all of you. And I love that. And I'm so grateful for that. That's about it. I'll just leave it with that. There was something else, but that's enough on for me. So thank you. And thanks for holding this workshop in this space for us.
Thank you. The first women that came into AA came into AA in Cleveland. Clarence Snyder was also the first one that had women in meetings. Dr. Bob didn't want them. He thought they would be too many problems. RJ, your trio up there, any of you guys want to share? Come on.
Hi, Tyler. Hi, group. Hi. My name's Chris, alcoholic. I want to say thank you for letting me be part of this group. I'm super excited and
I'm so glad you're here.
Really looking forward to the journey. And you know, Joe and you, the talking today is just so inspirational, and you guys have so much passion. I'm just really excited. As far as, you know, the homework that I went through, the thing that really pops out in my mind as I'm early in recovery is the reminder, you know, in the second part was the, you know, the grave nature of the disease, and just having that never leave my thought process when I'm dealing, you know, with you know, recovery and my program is just knowing how bad this disease really is. And never forgetting the last time, you know, my last jaunt, I guess I'll say, you know, that it is deadly to the bone for me. And it affects everything, you know, my body, my mind, and my spirit. So that's what really jumped out to me. And I'm just excited to be on this journey with everybody.
Thank you so much. I want to say too, real quickly, that some people are leaving early. I've asked everyone to stay. This is a group activity, and it's important that everybody stays to the end and just doesn't get off when they feel like it. So I'm just giving a reminder. Go on. Who would like to share?
I'll share, Tyler.
Sure. Great.
Hold on. Norm, alcoholic.
Hi, Norm.
How you doing? So here, you know, as we dig back into this work, you know, for my second time with, you know, BBA, I'm just so thankful, man, because, you know, I'm always one bad decision from madness, literally madness, being in those bushes, running down the street, doing crazy stuff and all that stuff. And there's one person who's going to keep me that way. And what I've come to learn is that I got to be God reliant here. God's the one that's going to guide me. God's the one that's going to hold my hand when I'm hurting. God's going to hold my hand when I'm having the issues with my daughter today and the things that have happened. He's holding my hand. He's surrounding me and hugging me and saying, it's all right, man. You're in a good place. This is where we're at. And as I look at this work and as I come and look at what's happening in my life today, I have to put my focus in there. And so when I go and do this tornado thing and I can see that my life still got tornadoes all over it, I'm like, man, I got to fix this, because otherwise I'm going to be blocking God. And then it's just going to cause me more misery. Right. And I don't have to be misery. I'm like, I'm recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body. Why do I got to, like, in my sobriety, you know, pick up present day agnosticism and end up where I'm at? You know what I mean? It just is, it's mind boggling to me, but it happens. And so as I look at this, I'm so thankful, man, today that I have these people in my life, that I'm part of a group such as this, that people that love each other, that we care about where we're headed. We want to learn. We want to grow, right? I just want to grow, man. I just want to be closer to God, because if I'm closer to God, then I'm going to be more peaceful, and then I'm going to be able to help somebody, and then I'm going to take this story and help people, right? You know, I walked behind the walls of a prison today. Like where I used to ride, I go in there as an employee. You know what I mean? It's just nuts. But that's what God is, right? And so as I work this stuff, I got to remember, man, I got to be this example. I got to, you know, do all these things, but I'm human, man. And I just like, man, I can make mistakes. I'm Norm. I'm an alcoholic. I make mistakes. But hey, you know what? If I can rely on God and become God reliant, and I work on myself and I work on these steps and I apply them with all honesty, like I was learning with my sponsor, it says, my thoughts determine my reality. I had to think about that. It's like my mind is like a computer. There's all these programs going on in the head. I'm an alcoholic. Like sometimes I just got to stop and focus on one thing and be like, can I just focus on God? I'm like, oh, maybe I might have some reprieve, right? I replace it with something else. That's what this work teaches me, man. It teaches me those places that I can come to that place of surrender. So I need to learn more about meditation. I need to learn how to be more diligent within those places in my life, because it's only going to better me, man. And so I'm so thankful. I'm so grateful that even with all the work and all the stuff I got going on, I'm going to take the time out and I'm going to sit here at this workshop and I'm going to learn what God has for me to learn to unblock things. That's where I'm at today. And I'm super thankful. So thank you.
Thank you, Norm. Okay, a couple things. We're going to wrap up the meeting. I want to thank everyone for sharing. And RJ is going to go over the assignment for next week, but I have a couple things I want to say about that. Thank you, everyone, for great shares tonight and everyone for being here and participating. And, you know, watch what your head tells you as you do this work. You know, it is slow. It feels like in the beginning, you know, it's like a little bit of but each assignment builds on the next, and each assignment is a deep experience within myself that I cannot identify. I will see it as time goes on through this work, but I don't always see it in the moment. Experience and stay where you are in the work. We're going into the doctor's opinion, which is the first part of the disease, the physical craving. We will go through in a very ordered way. Like Joe said, physical craving, mental obsession, and spiritual malady. We will be in the physical craving and let's stay in that when we're in that. And, you know, I say to myself now, you know, I have 31 years and I say, you know, have I outgrown being an alcoholic? Am I really still an alcoholic? And I go in with an open mind for a new experience. RJ, you want to give the assignment and then we will pray out. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm RJ Alcoholic. Thank you for the wonderful meeting. So we're going into assignment two, everyone. We're going to be doing transcribing the whole doctor's opinion. And this is one of the longer transcribing the doctor's opinion. So you need a little more time, I think, for this one. And then, so it's the whole doctor's opinion. And then the questions are going to be on the first step. Is in the 1, 2, 3 questions is going to be pages 4 through 9, questions 1 through 20. And that's it, I guess. And there's phone numbers if you need to call Tyler or Joe or whoever else. Feel free to pick up the phone if you got any questions.
Yes, we're here to help if you have any questions. Thank you, RJ. Okay, Kylie, would you want to pray us out with the serenity prayer?
Sure. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. We'll stay for 5 minutes after for any questions.